Good morning. I am a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, who has struggled with addiction in the past and currently struggling with grief and PTSD, and my name is Ashley. I was born on April 27th of 1987 to Robert and Catherine Kirkland. As a child, I attended several churches with my parents, but I got my foundation of who Jesus is from Sunday school. However, believing in Jesus doesn't make you immune to heartbreak and pain. I learned at a very young age that death is a part of life, but it doesn't make it any less painful. When I was 3, I witnessed the death of my best friend, my cousin Jonathan. I was traumatized. I stopped talking, not knowing how to deal with the big feelings. After the death of Jonathan, things weren't any easier. I was babysat by my grandmother, and she was the only grandparent I had ever known, as my other grandparents had already passed before I was born. My grandmother was not kind to me. I was physically abused by her, and this is where I got my feelings of not being good enough from. Being the only girl, I was blamed and punished for what the boys did, even if I wasn't a part of it. I was hit with whatever she could grab, and I had a lot of bitterness towards her that I have now worked out with the power of Jesus. When I was 14, I got pregnant with my first child, Alexis. I know having a baby at such a young age isn't ideal, but she is my world. I never knew I could love someone so much. She brought so much light into my life that had already seen so much darkness. I continued going to high school with the support of my parents and her father's parents. At the age of 16, I had my second child, Jace. When Jace was born, I fell in love all over again. He was perfect, just like his sister, and my heart was so full of love for my children. I wanted to give them the world, and more than that, I wanted to protect them from all of the bad in the world. However, I knew I wouldn't be able to do that without finishing high school first. There were so many people that expected me to quit and that wanted me to quit. But there is a certain satisfaction from proving people wrong. I actually graduated from high school in 2005 with my class with a 4.0 GPA and college credit. During high school, I also took classes to become a CNA. Less than a week after I graduated, I had my first job as a CNA at a nursing home, and shortly after starting my job, I found out I was actually pregnant with my third child, Aiden. But after finding out I was pregnant with Aiden, the father of my children and I ended our 8-year-long relationship, and I found myself being a single mom of 3. In 2009, I got married to Bryce Schendel. Shortly after Bryce and I were married, we found out I was pregnant with my 4th child and Bryce's 1st. We were so happy and excited, but that was short-lived. At 20 weeks pregnant, we had our first ultrasound to find out the baby's gender. Instead, we found out that our baby didn't have a heartbeat. It was devastating. I thought I had done something wrong, that I was the reason for the miscarriage, and I started thinking about what I learned in Sunday school, about how God was kind and merciful. But then, I was so angry, I started to question all the things I knew about him. However, I still taught my children about Jesus and how he loved us all. We would say our prayers at night and sing songs that I had learned in Sunday school. I still wanted them to know Jesus, even if I had questions and doubts. At the beginning of 2010, I started a massage therapy class. It was a year-long program. I had always wanted to be a massage therapist. It had been a dream of mine since middle school. But shortly after starting school, I found out I was pregnant again with Bryce's 2nd child and would have been my 5th. I was excited, but also terrified. So over the next 9 months, I went to school full-time and worked full-time. In December of 2010, I had my daughter, Zoe. At that point in time, I thought my life was perfect. I had a wonderful husband, amazing kids, a good job, a home, and going to school what I had always wanted to be. I had everything I ever wanted and never even thought to ask for it. April 23rd of 2011, I completed massage therapy school. I graduated that also with a 4.0 GPA. I was very proud of myself. I left my class and went straight to work. I worked a 12-hour night shift and got off at work 6 a.m. Sunday morning, Easter Sunday, April 24th of 2011. I spent the whole day with my family. I hadn't been able to do that much over the last year. It had been the best day we had had in a long time. Once again, short-lived. April 25th of 2011, at 1:30 a.m., my world and my life went up in flames, literally. My husband and I woke up to our house being on fire. I immediately went to save my children. Right as I was about to grab my infant daughter, Bryce picked me up and threw me out of the house and told me to stay out. As a mother, I couldn't just do nothing. So I grabbed the garden hose and went back inside to spray water to try to find my family. While inside, my oldest daughter, Alexis, was trying to get out of the house. So I grabbed her and took her outside. I had her run to our neighbor's house and have them call 911. No one else made it out of the house. Alexis and I suffered from second and third degree burns. Alexis was airlifted to Children's Mercy Hospital, and I followed by car. She spent the next 11 days in the burn unit. I refused at first to go to the hospital to be treated for my burns because I couldn't leave the only child I had left. However, after a lot of persuading from my family members and a lot of pain, I went to the hospital, but I refused to stay. During this time, I was lost and broken. I had lost my husband, Bryce. He was 24 years old. My son, Jace, was 6. My daughter, Aiden, was 5. My daughter, Zoe, was 4 months old. I lost my home, and I lost myself. I lost my faith. Not only was I lost, I was angry. I was angry at myself, at God, and at the world. And I couldn't understand why this had happened to me and my family. I had so many questions and no answers. 10 days after the fire was the funeral, there were over 1,000 people in attendance. But even with so many people, I felt so alone. After my daughter got out of the hospital, she went home with her father. That was the day I started drinking. That night was the night I was going to commit suicide. However, that wasn't in God's plan for me. I ended up with a babysitter, my older brother, and he never left me alone. Shortly after purchasing a new house, I felt even more alone. My house was too quiet, which wasn't the best thing for me. I spent a lot of time in my own head. I started having nightmares every night, and sometimes even when I just closed my eyes, so I was scared to go to sleep. So I would just drink until I passed out. In June, I went back to work, which meant that I couldn't drink anymore. But it also meant that the feelings I had been suppressing with alcohol returned. And so did the nightmares. I didn't know what to do to make them stop, so I started working a lot and trying not to sleep. I tried to spend as little time as possible by myself or at my house. But it's true that God works in mysterious ways, and I believe he puts people in our paths for a reason. In July of 2011, I met Lewis. I definitely wasn't looking for anyone, and I had prepared myself to be alone for the rest of my life because I thought no one would want someone so damaged. Once again, God had a different plan. Lewis and I started dating in August of 2011, and it started out good, but then not so much. We were soon in addiction together, and our relationship turned very toxic. 2 years into our relationship, we had a son, Liam. When Liam was born, I got a piece of my heart back that I thought I had lost forever. But after being sober for almost a year while I was pregnant, I was back on the drugs. There were many times I wanted to quit, but I thought about all of the feelings I had turned off for so long coming back. And I knew I didn't want that, so I wouldn't. So for 9 years, I was an addict in a toxic relationship, trying not to have feelings, and it worked until it didn't. April 5th of 2020, I decided I wanted a different life for me and my son, Liam. I still had a lot of anger towards myself and God. I still didn't have any faith in him. But I still got sober. And I told myself I would get sober for my son and myself, and I told myself that I would get sober by myself without any help from God. May 5th, 2020, Lewis stopped doing drugs as well. And on the 20th of May, Lewis and Liam got on a plane to Virginia. At the time, Lewis and I didn't have the best relationship. I had actually wanted out of the relationship because I didn't think anything was going to change. Once again, I didn't have any faith. Lewis and Liam were gone for almost a month. I was missing them both so much, so I made a very hard choice. I quit my job, packed my stuff, and made the drive from Kansas to Virginia. I was scared. I didn't know if anything would change between Lewis and I, but I wanted my family back. I arrived in Virginia on June 15th of 2020, and it was the best decision I ever made. August 22nd of 2020, Lewis and I were married in Virginia at Switzer Lake. My first Sunday in Virginia, I actually went to church for the first time since I was a child. I still didn't have any faith, but I figured if I wanted to make my relationship work, I should support Lewis in the way that he was trying to change his life. But little did I know that while sitting in the backseat of a car in the parking lot of the Church of the Nazarene, Jesus would show up. I sat in that car listening to Pastor Adrian, and everything he was saying went straight to my heart, and it felt like he was speaking directly to me. Towards the end of the service, he said something that has stuck with me ever since. He said, "If you're not dead, God's not done." At that moment, I gave Jesus my heart and asked him to forgive me. Since that day, I have been going to Celebrate Recovery and New Life Recovery. At first, I was in women's codependency, and I did that for a year and a half. After I did the steps the first time and started them again, I felt stuck. I felt like there was still no one that felt what I felt. So I went to prayer, and I asked God to show me what I needed to do. And he answered. God put it on my heart that we needed a group for grief and trauma. I am now happy to announce that we recently started a women's grief and trauma group at Celebrate Recovery. My husband and I are now the newest interns for Virginia Mennonite Missions, serving as local missionaries, ministering to those that are in and seeking recovery from addiction, grief, and trauma. Looking back at my life, I can now see where Jesus was. He was with me the whole time. He was with me through all the brokenness, loss, and pain. He feels what we feel. It even says in the Bible, John 11:35, that Jesus wept. And he holds us in his arms during our times of despair. Before, I couldn't see it because I couldn't see past my own anger and pain. Now I get to help others find their way out of the darkness and into the light that is Jesus Christ. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion, and all God and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves received from God. 2 Corinthians 1:3-4. Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Psalms 34:18. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Revelation 21:4.
Good morning. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, who's been set free from 17 years of drug addiction. I now currently am dealing with past hurts, trauma, self-worth, and depression, and fear of the future. And my name is Lewis. I was born in July of 1987 to Lewis and Kelly Roberts in Kansas City. I was born with scoliosis, which is a curvature of the spine. As a child, I went to church with my great-grandparents and spent the weekends at their home. I got my foundation of who Jesus Christ is from them. At home, however, was a different story. In the middle of 1990, my dad was arrested for cocaine and gun possession. At the time, my mother was pregnant with my younger sister. I remember my dad seeing my sister for the first time behind glass. I didn't know it at the time, but this would also be a part of my future as well. While my sister was being born, I was sent to my mom's father's house, where I was sexually abused over the next few days by my grandfather. At the age of 5 or 6, I started sneaking puffs of cigarettes that were left in the ashtray while my mother was cooking. Around the same time, I realized that my mother was sick, and I had witnessed her passed out many times from low blood sugars due to diabetes, and some of those times she was unresponsive. At that young of age, I thought she was dead. My dad would come home, and shortly after, the ambulance would arrive at our home as well. I remember in school, I was always afraid to go because I feared coming home to find my mother the same way again, or maybe even worse. Teachers were starting to notice the physical attributes of the scoliosis, and their concerns about my health became greater. They also started to notice my behavioral changes, and at the age of 9, I was removed from my parents' custody and placed into the state's custody. I was moved between foster homes, boys' homes, and detention centers. I struggled to fit in, which led me to fighting and acting out. I was kicked out of 32 homes and placements over the next 5 years. Over this time, my scoliosis progressed dramatically worse, and on my 14th birthday, I had emergency corrective surgery to correct a 76-degree curvature in my spine that was pressing on my left lung and my heart. The doctor gave me a 50% chance of living through the surgery and a 25% chance of ever walking again without help. Today, I've beat those odds. But it wasn't easy. For the next year of my life, I was still in boys' homes. I was bound to a wheelchair. I remember beating on my legs until I could not lift my arms. I just wanted my legs to work and to be able to walk and to run around like the rest of the kids. I underwent extreme physical therapy. I was made fun of. And eventually I was able to walk using only a walker. But as soon as I didn't need that walker, I was back to fighting and acting out. All those people that had made fun of me. And during this time, my mom was in the hospital fighting for her life. I had no visitation privileges due to the fighting and behavioral outbursts. The only person I was allowed to see was a pastor from my great-grandparents' church where I was raised. He was able to bring me a personalized Bible, and then the Bible, Pastor Pruitt wrote, "This Bible will keep you from sin, or sin will keep you from this Bible." That was dated January 17th of 2000. While still in the same boys' homes, I continued to fight and act out. All I wanted was to be accepted and to fit in. The only ones that I thought accepted me were the older ones, the much tougher ones. Soon after I began to work the program to gain my privileges back, I was eventually able to visit my mother in the hospital. As her health was declining, I finally started reading that Bible. I started working the program, no longer fighting or acting out, because I had nothing left to prove. I just wanted to get back home to my family. I completed the program and I had to go to one more boys' home. There I was granted weekend visits with my parents. My mother's health appeared to get better as she was put on dialysis for kidney failure. Finally, at the age of 16, I completed that program and I was allowed to move back home with my parents. But my dad was no longer the same dad that I remember. He no longer ran the home like a military boot camp. He became more my friend than my father. Around this time, is when my dad smoked marijuana with me and my friends for the first time. I thought he was the coolest dad in the world. He began teaching me how to weigh up and how to sell drugs, and he would allow my friends a safe place to drink and use drugs, or so he said. My popularity in school was on the rise, but not for athletic or academic reasons, but because my house was known as a party house. I started selling harder drugs like cocaine and methamphetamines, and I got mixed up with the wrong kind of people. And one day after school, I sold drugs to a woman that I had never met, and she robbed me for $275, terrified to go back to the dealer shorthanded because of the things that I'd seen him do to other people and the reputation that he had. I raced to my parents' home and got my dad's gun. I went back out to find her, and when I did, I opened fire on her driving past and striking her vehicle and a police vehicle that was right behind her several times. Needless to say, I didn't make it home that night. I was arrested and charged with aggravated discharge of a firearm at an occupied dwelling vehicle with the intent to do great bodily harm. I was put on house arrest while awaiting court when our house was raided, and I took drug charges for what was mine and what was my dad's, so that my dad could be free to take care of my mom, as I was only a teenager. I was sentenced to 26 months in prison. Soon after my arrest, my mom was put back into the hospital, where she would undergo over a dozen surgeries during that next year. During my sentence on January 17th of 2005, my mother passed away due to surgical complications. She was 36 years old. I was 17. Bitter and angry with the world and all of my circumstances, I began to accept the cycle of my lifestyle, that this would be how it were, this is how it would be forever, or so I thought. I was allowed to attend my mother's funeral in chains and shackles. I was driven over 8 hours to attend her funeral. In May of 2005, I was released from prison early due to good time. However, during my incarceration, my father had lost the home that I had known as home for most of my life, and he lost most of its contents. So coming home felt nothing like home. I didn't have a bedroom at this residence. I slept on the sofa in the living room. I had no clothes except for what I was released from prison in. My father didn't welcome me back home the way that I expected him to. We just picked up where we left off, doing drugs and selling drugs. Upon being released from prison, I also found out that my father had a girlfriend and he had been seeing her while my mother was in the hospital. It just so happened to be the mother of the girl that I had been dating prior to my arrest. I felt angry and betrayed with my father because I had spent all this time in prison so that he could take care of my mom, and all the while he was having an affair, and he failed. Despite my feelings, I stayed because I had no money. I had no job. I had nowhere to go. But he supplied all the drugs that I would ever want. I continued dating the same girl that I had been seeing in 2007. She gave birth to my first child, my daughter Audrey. Audrey's mother ended up getting an apartment in the next town over, which was an income-based housing. I worked a part-time job at McDonald's and a part-time job at a pizza shop, but also was a full-time drug dealer. I spent the next few years in an on-again, off-again, very toxic relationship that was my first. I ended up in jail several different times after this for drug possession, driving without a license. That was my first charges as an adult. I got out of jail and I moved back to my dad's, where he gave me this Bible that I had received several years earlier when I was in boys' homes. Still angry with God and all my life circumstances, I just put the Bible in the drawer and I didn't look at it for many years. I spent a few more times in and out of jail. And in 2011, while I was in Colorado with some friends on vacation, I saw a story on the news about a family back in Kansas that perished in a house fire. Having not seen my daughter in several months and hearing the story on the news, I had prayed for the first time in years. Fast forward 3 months, I met the woman whose children and husband died in that house fire. In that moment, I knew that God had brought us together. And I moved out of my dad's house for the last time. I was still on probation, absconding, and for the next 4 years I was on the run. During this time, Ashley and I were addicted to drugs and in a toxic relationship, and still on the run from the law. Ashley gave birth to my second child, our son Liam. The past always has a way of catching up. I was arrested for a warrant that was almost 5 years old on Christmas morning when my son was just a year old. I was taken to jail where I was there until the new year. I was bonded out on the 2nd of January. But for the next several years, our lives would spiral out of control, still heavily in addiction. I had several jobs, but I couldn't keep them due to the drug use. The only thing that I thought I knew how to do was to sell drugs. I didn't know that there was a better way. And if there was, I knew I couldn't do it on my own. During this time, my dad was in and out of jail and prison. His health was declining, and he ended up on dialysis. April 3rd of 2017, the same day that my house was raided back in 2004, I was arrested again, and this time for distribution of methamphetamine. If convicted, I was looking at 144 minimum months to 196 maximum months. However, the judge was lenient because it had been a few years since I had been in trouble. He suspended my sentence and gave me 2 years of intensive supervised probation, and I had to register as a drug offender in Kansas for the next 20 years, during which I was still continuing to get high. I did several sanctions in jail, 2 stays in rehab, and I saw 2 therapists for the next couple of years, and spent 4 months during my last sanction in prison. During this time, Ashley brought my son and my father to see me. I didn't know it at the time that it would be the last time that I would see my dad, and it would be through glass. And on January 2nd of 2019, my dad passed away while I was incarcerated. When I got out, I was even angrier with the world and with myself. I didn't want to live anymore. I spent every day trying to get as high as I possibly could to the point of overdose. My relationship with Ashley was falling apart, and I was pushing her away and everyone else that cared about me or loved me. I wanted so desperately to know another way. I remember laying on our bedroom floor and just crying about my life and realizing that I had not done anything with it. Realizing that out of 180 contacts in my phone, not a single person in there didn't use drugs. I needed someone to talk to. I needed to talk to someone that knew about my life. And so I reached out to my cousin, Nathan Carr. And I told him about my situation, and he had shared with me about him looking at 20 years. I thought, great. He told me that I needed to pray and ask God into my life. At that time, I didn't want to hear that. However, one night when I was at the end of myself, I did just that. I hit my knees and I repented and I prayed and I asked God to come into my life and to make things new. And that would be the last time that I'd talk to Nathan for about another 9 months. In November of 2019, I had completed probation and parole. And I started going to church and taking my son and my daughter. I stopped selling and doing drugs. I thought I was finally turning my life around. When COVID hit, or then COVID hit, I could no longer go to church. I ended up relapsing. But this time I hit rock bottom and I hit hard. Ashley left me and she went and got clean. And while she was away, I had several suicide attempts. One day I saw that Nathan was on Messenger, and I reached out again, but this time in desperation, and done with the life that I had been living, and ready to start new. He had told me about what God had done for him and about a program that was called Celebrate Recovery. Later that night, they held a Zoom meeting with the other leaders from Celebrate Recovery and told them about my situation, how I was suicidal and how I was struggling in addiction, and that I was lost, and they all prayed for me. They didn't even know me. God saved me that night, and on May the 20th of 2020, my son and I boarded a plane to Virginia. That day, my life drastically began to change. God had a plan for my life and for my family and for my future all along. One day, as we were on a fishing trip to Switzer Lake with my son, he had asked me if we could kneel next to the water and to pray for Ashley to come to Virginia and for us to be a family again. And on June the 15th, 2020, God answered those prayers. Ashley arrived in Virginia. We began going to Celebrate Recovery and New Life Recovery as a family. We began to heal from our past, starting a new life together in Christ Jesus. And on August the 22nd of 2020, Pastor Margaret would marry Ashley and I in that same exact place that me and Liam knelt and prayed for his mom to come to Virginia. Since then, we have been baptized at the Church of the Nazarene. We attend church regularly. I have completed a step study for Celebrate Recovery and became a leader for the men's addiction group there. I've led a step study and completed it, and will be 4 years sober in May. All glory be to God. And my wife and I have led Life's Healing Choices at the Nazarene Church, and together we are serving in ministry as ministry leader apprentices for the Celebrate Recovery. And we are also the newest interns for the Transcend program at Virginia Mennonite Missions. During our internship with VM Missions, we will be on a learning immersion of leadership and ministry that consists of discipleship training, peer recovery, and peer support specialist training. Our long-term goal is working alongside my cousin Nathan Carr in Resurrected Ministries, working in a Christ-centered men's and women's recovery home, and my faith and relationship with Jesus Christ grows stronger every day. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Is anyone among you sick? Let them call the elders of the church to pray over them and anoint them with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayers that are offered in faith will make the sick person well. The Lord will raise them up, and if they have sinned, they will be forgiven. James 5:14 through 15.
Since 1999 in the United States, drug overdose has killed almost 1 million people. Over 96,000 people die each year from overdose. In Virginia alone, there are 1,547 deaths by overdose per year, and more than four times as many people died from drug overdose than homicide in the first month of 2021.
We want to provide an unwavering hope, support, and guidance to individuals that are struggling with addiction and striving for their recovery. Grounded in the transformative power of Jesus Christ, we are dedicated to walking alongside these individuals in their journey towards healing, offering compassion, understanding, and a safe haven for their physical, mental, and spiritual restoration. Through fostering a community of love, acceptance, and grace, we empower individuals to reclaim their lives and embrace their God-given potential and become thriving contributors to society. We strive to be a beacon of light in people's darkness, spreading the message of divine healing and inspiring all of those that we serve to discover true freedom and lasting recovery in the arms of our Savior. We are asking for your prayers and financial support for this next year. As we learn and grow as leaders and local missionaries, we would like your support to help us raise $21,000 that would go toward a matching grant that would make us fully funded. We have already been a part of many people's stories that are in this room. We have seen lives changed. We've seen families reconciled and relationships between children and their parents mended, all through the power of Jesus Christ. God's not done. He is still performing miracles, providing hope for the helpless and rest for the weary and brokenhearted. And if you know someone that is dealing with addiction, please don't give up on them. Continue to pray for them, because God's not done. After the service, we will be available in the back to talk and answer any questions that you may have. And if you're interested in partnership, we have prayer cards and support slips if you're interested. Thank you.